This week, we've got Jeremy White, the CEO and founder of Code Weavers. We've got a contest. Hey, and a whole lot more. My Mac Podcast number 181.
The next generation of radio. It's the MyMac.com podcast.
I'm Tim Robertson, publisher of MyMac magazine at MyMac.com, joining today by Guy Searle. Hello, Guy.
Hello, Tim. Once again, here we are.
We've got later in the show, Sam Levin's going to join us with a cool Mac Picks and a contest, which is really going to be pretty cool. That's with Casemate. And but right now, Guy, you were talking about this last week. We talked about the product a little bit, and you seem pretty excited about talking to Jeremy White. He's the CEO and founder of Code Weavers, and he's with us online right now. Hello, Jeremy.
Hello. Thanks for having me tonight.
Hey, thanks for being here. You know, Code Weavers, this is one of the products that we were really looking at during the Macworld Expo. You guys seem to have a pretty busy booth.
Oh, yeah. We're having a lot of fun out at Macworld.
The ability to run Windows software is...
Without Windows.
Obviously, most of the people that listen to this show have a job, and a lot of them have jobs that they have to use Windows software, so they can't do work at home unless they got an Intel Mac and they install Boot Camp in Windows, whether that's XP or Vista or what have you.
Or go through all the hassle of, not so much hassle, but you know, using VMware or using Parallels or something.
But they still have to install Windows to do it.
Right.
So, crossover the Mac, crossover Mac, I should say. With this program, we don't have to do that, right?
Exactly. That's exactly right. You just run the application itself, and you don't have to run Windows. You don't have to run antivirus software. You don't have to pay for Windows and all of that. You just run the application you want.
When Apple first announced that they were going to switch to the Intel platform, right on this podcast, I made a prediction. I said, I bet it won't be long before you'll be able to pretty much natively run Windows software somehow without needing Windows. You're the company that's done it. How did you guys do this?
That's exactly right. Well, it's magic, you know. That's what we do now.
Bring,
bring. Yeah, we wave a magic wand.
You're evil geniuses. That's what it is.
Yes. We've sold our souls to the devil, and that's no.
Or Steve Jobs.
Yeah. It's we use a technology, an open source technology called Wine, or the Wine Project, and we're the company behind the Wine Project, and that's essentially a complete implementation of Windows. So that's the technology that lets us do this magic. We actually run the Windows application, and Wine lets that application run and feel as though it's on Windows, even though it's not really.
Do you have to build in compatibility per program for it to run?
That's the great challenge we have, is that we're... while we run many, many applications, we don't run everything perfectly yet. It's a pretty substantial job we have completely replacing Windows. So what we do is we attack it really one application at a time, or sort of a group of applications at a time.
Do you allow other people from outside the company to work on these?
Oh, absolutely. It's an open source project, so we're very much a community-oriented company. We're very much built on community contributions. So we actually have a database on our website. We call it our Compatibility Center. That's really a whole community area where people can see what applications work and kind of work together to make everything work better.
I've noticed that a lot of Windows PC games are compatible now.
Right.
Well, that's is that the core business for crossover Mac?
No, that's, you know, one of the interesting things about the Mac market for us that's been kind of interesting to watch is that there isn't any really one big thing. You know, one guy wants Outlook, another guy wants
Vizio,
Team Fortress, another guy wants Vizio. There's no one focus. So we really, I mean, it's a bit of a challenge, but really we're trying to get everything to work. And games is our most recent initiative. We've really put a lot of energy into games recently, and so we're very excited by what we're making, you know, what we're making possible there.
Yeah, you've actually created a separate program called Crossover Games to just run games.
Exactly. And the idea there is that Crossover Games, we're going to rev a little more frequently, so it's going to be a little more bleeding edge, a little more able to keep up the, you know, with the latest and greatest. Whereas the regular Crossover Mac is going to be more stable, and for your Outlooks and for your Vizios, where you're not really looking to be bleeding edge, you just kind of want to get your email every day.
Sure. So how compatible is it when someone needs to run, so let's say Vizio, for instance, my wife has to use Vizio in her day job in the pharmaceutical industry. Evil. And so how does it work for her? If she has a copy of Vizio to install on her MacBook, how does your program interact?
Well, Vizio's a great example. So what the process would be is you install Crossover, and Crossover is just a regular Mac application, so the installation is just dragging it to the app folder, and you're done. And then she would insert her Vizio CD, and after, you know, giving it a couple of pints of blood or whatever you got to give Microsoft it.
Yeah, DNA sample.
Right.
Sure.
You know, and empty your wallet, and then you go through the installation. And then you get on your, you know, in the Finder, you get a launcher for Vizio. And you double click on that, and up comes Vizio. And it runs as though it's a native application. You're running just Vizio. Crossover will run. It's essentially a helper application that runs in the background, but it's not consuming a lot of memory. It's not consuming a lot of CPU. You're really just running Vizio. And Vizio is a good example because right now today we only run Vizio 2003. We're not running, I believe, Vizio 2007 is the latest.
Right.
About to ship support for that, but we're not running it today. So that's an example where we're not, you know, where we run many things but not everything just yet.
Okay, so Crossover, it's a background application. It's not like if you want to run a Windows application that you have to start Crossover first and then run the application. You basically just go to the Finder and double click the Windows app that you want to run.
Right, exactly. You do have to install it first, just like you would have to under Windows. You know,
naturally.
But yeah, yeah.
It just installs it right on the Mac's hard drive. It doesn't freak out because it doesn't see C drive or anything like that.
That's right. We Windows applications throw a hissy fit if they don't have a C drive. So you have to give them a C drive or they're going to feel that they're lost. So we have a simulated environment that includes a C drive, but that's right in your Mac. It's right in your, under your, library application support. So it's right in your own folder. So you can go manipulate it and drill down and look what's there yourself.
So there's no segmenting hard drives involved for this operation.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
And you have a Vizio document on your desktop, you double click on it and Vizio opens. You save it right into your desktop. You're not bridging environments, you're not saving it somewhere else, it's right there.
Now I know that you guys also support the Linux operating environment. Does the Mac and the Windows the Mac and the Linux versions pretty much work the same? They have the same compatibility lists, or
yes.
I know that the Linux users, are they kind of farther ahead at this point with the compatibility?
It's really pretty similar. It's the same core technology. Wine works essentially the same on both. The advantage a Linux person has, or I suppose the difference a Linux person has, is Linux and Windows, most of them work the same. I can't explain that quite right, but a good Mac application has its menu bar on the top, and then its Windows in the middle of the mid of your screen.
Right.
Well, Microsoft applications don't do that. They want their menu.
No, they put right in the application.
Right. So Vizio on your Mac is not quite as nice as Vizio on Linux is.
So if somebody was interested in running a Microsoft application and they installed Linux, say, on VMware Fusion or Boot Camp, because you could do it in Boot Camp too. It would work then too?
Oh, sure. Yeah, although you're starting to get a little bit on the silly side since you couldn't install it directly on your Mac. And then you should install Sigmin and then install,
Yeah. We're all about the silly.
All right. Well,
now is this considered emulation software?
Actually, we're kind of touchy about that. We Wine, the technology we use, stands for Wine is not an emulator.
I know that was a setup.
So thank you. Gosh, I'll get you your.
So you guys have recreated the Windows API,
right?
Basically,
without using Microsoft
proprietary software.
Right.
Right. Exactly. So it's what we've done is we call it a compatibility layer. I like to ask people to think of it as a compatibility layer. So rather than like VMware, where it's you're actually emulating a PC, we're not emulating a PC. We've completely rewritten Windows. It's as though what we really do is the net effect is we make the Mac into a Windows compatible computer.
How does it work with like DirectX for games?
Works great, all the way up through DirectX 9. Yep.
Wow, that's impressive right there, because that has been a problem with a lot of emulation software titles.
Right.
Like VMware and programs like that. They have a problem, excuse me, that I've seen by using the program myself, that they don't really do well when it comes to DirectX games.
That's right. And we do. You can play, I mean, when we announce game support, we're talking you can play it, and you can play it with, you know, frame rates that are in the green.
Any chance on you guys emulating the Xbox 360? It'd be nice to be able to play that on my computer rather than taking up the whole TV sometimes.
Oh, Tim, I think they're still really busy on Commodore 64.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah. Actually, it's Apple II we've got to get done first. So
both of those you could actually do in a web browser at this
point. Yeah, I've seen those. Those are awesome.
That's pretty. Actually, I've seen System 7, Mac OS 7, in a web browser, and it works fine. So, I mean, the footprint is next to nothing, and it takes next to nothing to load it on a web page. I mean, it's smaller than this podcast will be.
Yeah, I was
in physical size.
I was hunting around trying to find someplace I could play the original Load Runner. You know, just to.
There's a lot of places that you can do it.
Yeah.
I don't remember any URLs right off the bat. I'm sure if anybody's listening, will send me an email saying, "Hey, you could do it here." But I've actually played Load Runner in my web browser. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
And the problem was, though, that game didn't hold up as well as I remembered it.
Yeah.
So how much, if I want to plunk down my hard-earned cash, how much is it going to cost me for Crossover Mac?
So Crossover Mac goes for, on our website, it goes for $60, $59.95. And what's cool...
That's cheap.
Yeah. Cheap yucks. And what's cool about it is we throw in Crossover games for free. At least we do today.
Ooh.
Yeah. So it's a really good bargain right now.
So how long have you been a Mac user, Jeremy?
Well, you know, I've used Macs. I mean, my first love was an Apple II. One of my first loves. I've loved a lot of computers. Used Macs, done software development on them really, you know, steadily for 20, 25 years now.
What was your favorite computer of all time? Not necessarily Mac, but computer in general.
Oh, that's a tough one. That'd either be the...
Not including the ones right now. I mean, you know, it's too easy to say, well, this is the fastest and, you know, blah, blah, blah. Looking back, which one was the one that stuck out?
You know, that's a hard one. I loved a TRS-80 once, and I loved an Apple II once, and I loved a VAX. Those were sort of my three first loves, really. And I couldn't really put any one of them above the other.
But you used to work with a digital VAX system?
Yep.
Oh, my
VAX
goodness.
11780.
I used to work on a 11750.
Oh, sure.
Long time.
Those were good machines at the time.
Well, and they were I learned programming on the 780, and their documentation was phenomenal. No one has ever done as good a job as digital did.
But then again, you couldn't really do anything with a computer without programming it.
Well, yeah. Minor details.
Oh, is that a problem?
Hey, you could play Empire, and that game ruled, man. I'm telling you.
I think that the Web 2.0 generation that's really only got into computers since Web 2.0, which is a term I really hate, came into being, they really don't know what being a computer user is all about, how difficult and time-consuming even simple tasks were, even, you know, 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah, I say that to my kids, of course, all the time. I'm like, oh, you have it so easy. You know, boy, back before we didn't have email, boy.
You know. I remember when emails, the ability to email someone outside of your either the BBS or the online service, when that became a reality, it was kind of a big deal. Oh, I can email someone on CompuServe now? Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
So how did CodeWeavers get started?
Well, we were actually founded in 1996, and in 99, it was the 90s and all, I first stumbled on the Wine project and kind of fell in love with it and thought it was so cool, I decided to essentially reinvent the company around that fundamental mission of, you know, helping people use Windows software on alternate operating systems. So we were really kind of reborn in the year 2000 on this mission to help people run Windows apps.
Why?
Yeah, right.
I mean,
it's a dirty job, but someone's got to do it.
Someone's got to do it. You
know, and actually, it's because I have always loved computers, and I loved when I was young, and there was all these different computers and all these different choices. And to be honest, I feel like Microsoft you know, because of their success, arguably, they sort of sucked all of the fun out of computers. And I sort of feel like if you can give people back the choice so that, hey, you can choose to use your Mac, it'll make it fun again. You know, that's my personal, I know. So there you go. So that's why I'm here.
Now, you've got your own blog as well.
That's right.
Do you find a lot of time to blog, or is it kind of one of those things that whenever I get to it?
It's kind of whenever I get to it. I have to admit, I've just started it this year, so I'm doing my best to keep up. But I don't know. You can tell I'm an old timer, and this newfangled Web 2.0 stuff. Boy, I don't know if I can keep up or not.
It is. The nice thing about it, though, and this is what I found, anyways, when it comes to stuff like Twitter and all the different social networking sites, really what they are about, at least in my position, is PR.
Right.
People, you get your name out there and people remember you and either the company or, in my case, the website and that sort of thing. And they get to know you, thus they trust the company that you work for or that you own. Thus, they're more likely to give you money.
I suppose.
Well, the last part hasn't worked out so well for me, anyway.
I was going to say, yeah, let me know. It hasn't worked for me yet either. What I like about it is it lets me put a personal touch on it. And there are things that I'm happy to say to people, and I'll say to them one-on-one. But, you know, I'm not going to put a press release out about, you know, my favorite story about wine, you know. Whereas I can put that right on my blog. It's you know, and then if I do a bad job, people just don't have to read it.
What's the one thing about Code Weavers that our listeners don't know but would be surprised to learn?
Oh, don't
know. Or you in general?
Oh, yeah, us in general. I think that what strikes me, you know, we go stand in the Apple stores and kind of tell people, we'll go stand at Macworld. And what strikes me is that people are amazed when they really try it, that they don't realize how amazing our technology is, and they always say, gee, I've never heard of you guys. And I really think people, you know, it's been kind of tough for me. It's like people say, oh, I just bought Parallels. If only I had known, and I wish people would, you know, go and give it a try. It really is, it really can be as amazing as it sounds.
Why don't you think people know about it as much as they should?
Well, this is the unusual thing. We're a small company. We're an open source based company. So that, you know, right there tells you I'm kind of a wild-eyed optimist idealist.
Right. You don't have a $100,000 ad budget.
No. In fact, I have a $0 ad budget. And so, you know, we kind of rely on word of mouth and people spreading the word. So
and podcasts.
And podcasts and, you know, people reading our blog and so forth and so on. You know, it's interesting. It was a lot easier in the Linux market because it's a much smaller space. And it was a lot easier to be a big fish in the small pond there. And this goldfish is telling you it's tough swimming over here, man.
Yeah, it is. Is it easier to sell Linux user software? Linux historically has been, you know, all about the free and the open source. And here's an application that's going to cost them money. Is that a hard sell to Linux users?
Well, it cuts in a lot of interesting ways. So you've got Linux people are, you know, you can say lots of best swear words that aren't appropriate for a podcast about their spending habits.
yeah.
But at the same time, they also have a great appreciation for what we do with open source. You know, we're the biggest backer of the Wine Project, and that actually means a lot to our Linux customers. And also, our Linux customers don't have applications. They don't have Microsoft Office. They don't have, you know, Quicken. So they have a greater need for what we do. You know, and on the flip side, the Mac guys, what's wonderful is, you know, they think $60 is nothing. I mean, Linux guys are deeply upset. You know, anything that's north of zero.
What? And you're not Mac paying us to
$60? Oh, my God.
Yeah. Where Mac guys are like, oh, $60. Well, I'll get two, you know. But then the corollary is Mac people don't have as clearly defined a target, so we can't work on just Office for them or just one thing for them. They really want a broad range of things, and they want it to all be perfect. You know, that's... The bar's a lot higher in the Mac market. That's, you know, Linux guys are like, hey, it doesn't crash the first time I load. That's, you know, amazing.
Plus. It's a plus.
Yeah, that's a plus right there. Right,
yeah, exactly.
But now obviously, you don't have any support from Microsoft for a product like this.
No,
has there been any litigation, either, you know, actual litigation or threatened litigation over products like this?
No, none at all.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Maybe they just didn't know. Crap.
No, they actually, they know
oh,
about
I
us
bet Microsoft
very
knows
highest point. Levels.
Yes, I know they do. In fact, we've got a couple of Microsoft employees who listen to the show regularly. So,
all right.
Some are going to hear about you right now. Jeremy, I wish you guys the best of success. I hope that anybody listening to the show is going to get excited about it, rush right out and buy a copy. The program is Crossover Mag. You guys have
and Crossover Games.
Crossover Games.
Right.
Yep. The website is codeweavers.com. If you can't figure out how to spell it, go up to the MyMac website. We'll have a link directly to Codeweavers, show 181. Jeremy, good luck, and thank you very much for being on the show this
week. Well, thanks for having me, guys.
We're delighted this week on All Over the Mac here at the MyMac podcast to have Kathy Schindel. Is that how you pronounce your name?
Yes.
And you retired from the military?
Yes, I'm a retired Air Force chaplain.
A chaplain, not a combat officer.
No, I'm a United Methodist minister.
And now we know you as a member of the Tucson Macintosh user group.
That's right.
How long have you been in Tucson? How long have you been involved in our user group?
I retired back to Tucson 5 years ago. I've been in the user group now about a year and a half. I've owned a Mac now 2 to 3 years.
So you're relatively new to Macintosh, new to the user group, and I see you're holding something in your hand. Is this a Palm Pilot or a Trio or a BlackBerry?
This is my new addiction. It's my iPod Touch.
Why an iPod Touch as opposed to a classic iPod or an iPhone?
Well, I had a video iPod, but I had a Palm Pilot, a PDA, and it was getting unhappy. It didn't like to work with my Mac. It was about 4 years old, and I was having not only software problems but hardware problems. And I kept waiting for Apple to introduce some sort of PDA. And when the iPod Touch first came out, I went to the Apple store all excited and was very disappointed that there was no way to input data, to enter anything on the iPod itself, only from a computer. Now with the new iPod Touch that came out this winter, you can actually put in your appointments, your contact information, like any other PDA. I guess it's like an iPhone without a telephone.
Do you use the internet features of it?
I have, but not as often. When you're older like I am, it's harder to do because of the size of the print. I'm still learning to work that, but I haven't needed to use that as much. But I have Wi-Fi'd it out onto the internet.
Like a PDA, does it sync to your computer so you can get your addresses and your contacts and things sort of plugged into the touch by just sweeping it over using software?
When I plug my iPod in, it calls up iTunes, and then in iTunes on my computer, it automatically syncs everything. Syncs my photos, my music, my contacts list, which is actually it's my Mac contacts list address book on my computer. It also syncs my calendar. If I had a PC, then it would sync to Outlook or whatever. It will not sync to my old PDA contacts, so I had to duplicate those to be able to pull them up. But because my Mac, my PDA was in such bad shape, I had already doubled my calendar and almost everything onto my computer into another program as for safety.
How often do you use your iPod Touch for listening to songs or looking at your pictures?
When I'm stuck waiting, I'm likely to be looking at my pictures more than listening to my songs because I may need to hear what's going on. If I'm stuck on an airplane or something, I've probably got the music on. I was using until I got my new car, I would use my iPod Touch in the car through my stereo. My new car has XM satellite radio. So I go back and forth depending on the mood I'm in to my music on my iPod or the XM satellite radio.
Do you have more music on your computer than that can fit onto your iPod Touch?
No, I do not. I'm not a maniac with thousands of tunes. I have probably 40, 50 albums.
Oh, enough to keep you busy for a while.
And of a variety of styles.
And as we're talking right now, there are people stuck at O'Hare Airport, and I'm sure you're glad you're sitting here in sunny, breezy Tucson rather than using your touch in an airport someplace.
Absolutely, and I'd also be glad to have something I bought and haven't used yet, which is a little tool that supposedly with AA batteries will recharge your iPod so that you don't have to fight people for an outlet on the wall when you're in a setting like that that's in chaos.
Who makes that battery accessory?
I don't know. I got it through Magellan's Travel Supplies.
Let's talk more about your work. Now, you're retired from the military.
Right.
But are you fully retired? I mean, are you playing golf and sitting with your toes in the pool every day like a good Tucson retiree?
No, I work quarter time at Catalina United Methodist Church, and in addition, I have a number of volunteer responsibilities.
And does the iPod Touch play into any of those at all?
Well, one of the most important functions is the calendar, which keeps me straight. And so I can enter all my calendar appointments. I can look at my calendar by the month, by the day. When I want overall to go from date to date, I use the month site. But when I'm looking at what do I have to do today, I put it in what's called list function, and I can see everything for that day lined out by time and go up and down to look at days ahead if I don't want to go through the calendar and punch the actual date in.
How long did it take to get used to the physical interface, the graphical interface of the iPod Touch compared to your well-weather-worn Palm Pilot?
It's much faster and easier. I found that actually using the keyboard on the iPod Touch was faster and easier than either doing graffiti or the keyboard on my PDA. Like that, you had to learn graffiti. On this, you got to learn pretty soon. You know, you make your fat finger mistakes in the beginning as you try and find the exact square you want to finger it into. But it's so easy to move, and it's so easy to go from place to place. So I use the calendar the most. The other function I use often is my contacts. And Apple, again, is so smart because down on the right-hand side is the alphabet. And right now I'm in the N's because I had Nemo's address and phone number to pull up. But if I want to look up somebody whose name begins with B or A, then I just punch that part of the alphabet, and the contacts list goes immediately to that, and I don't have to swirl through. But if I want to have fun, I just use my finger, and it just flies through the alphabet.
What advice do you have for people who are not necessarily ancient, but middle-aged and a little bit older, young retirees who are considering getting an iPod? What are the advantages of the Touch versus perhaps the phone or the iPod Classic or the Nano or the Shuffle or the competition?
Well, the phone at this point is not an option for me because AT&T says the service is marginal at my home, and
that's
I'm
true.
Not buying.
I've been there,
a
and I
phone.
Can't call anybody.
I won't have a phone that I can't use at my house. What this does is keeps me from having to carry my old iPod for my music and my pictures and carry the big fat PDA. It's so much thinner and sleeker that it's so easy to carry. Now, if there was a Wi-Fi here, I could go out on the internet. I'm getting ready to go on vacation, and I have fun because I have the world clock, and I have mm-hmm. the time zones of where I'm going to be as well as the local time zone. That stays constant. If I want to go look at the weather at where I'm going to be, I can look at the weather. I can do whatever I want. But again, I need Wi-Fi access for that. I'm not following my stocks. I could follow maps. If I knew I had guaranteed Wi-Fi internet access, I could use my map function for navigation. I have complaints about it right now, and I have fun because I have the world. One of them is that there's no games of any kind yet. That one way I would pass time when caught, like in the airport or some way, was pull up solitaire or something on my PDA. And as of yet, there are no games for the iPod Touch. I assume that when games come out for the iPhone, that they'll work on the iPod Touch. The other thing is you really have to learn to work carefully on when you're using Safari on your iPod Touch to be able, when you're trying to get the size of print to be larger, that you hit exactly what you want in that small area, or if you're not careful, you're off to an ad or off to an article that you didn't want. You're just trying to get the print larger. I find it's easier when I turn it on its side, and then my print is much larger and much easier to read than if I have it in its normal up and down location.
I've got some just easy questions. Where did you buy it? How much did it cost? And did you get the AppleCare extended warranty?
I actually bought it at the Apple Store because I wanted to go in and lay my hands on it and work on it and see how easily it worked. And I think it was, this is 8 gigabytes, and I think it was 300, and 16 gigabytes would be 400, and now I believe there's a 32 gigabyte version out for 500. I did buy AppleCare. because it's small. I was afraid I could drop it or damage it, but I find that the rubber kind of case I have on it protects it beautifully, and because I carry it in a pocket in my purse, I have a plastic protection sheet, a little thin sheet over the actual screen itself so I don't scratch up the screen.
Any idea who makes this beautiful pink rubberized case on the back?
It says
in case.
In case. This one, I had a hard time choosing between my hot pink and turquoise blue. There were also more neutral colors. I looked initially at a solid acrylic case, but actually this is much more comfortable, and because it's plastic, because it's rubberized, it feels like it would give a better protection. I haven't dropped it yet, and I don't want to, but that's, you know, one of the fears that could happen.
And who makes the plastic sheet that goes over the front? Any idea?
It was there for sale in the Apple Store. I've always used a sheet like that on my PDA because I had to use my stylus, and the salesman was kind of skeptical. Well, you don't need a stylus. You don't need that. And I said, no, but I want to protect the glass, and so this keeps it from being scratched. And if I get it dirty or smeared, I just clean it with what you clean your glasses with.
Well, we're wrapping up our interview with Kathy Schindel, and she's retired from the military, and you're listening to the MyMac podcast. Our segment is All Over the Mac. Let's just wrap up with any recommendations you might have for people to consider when they're thinking about getting an iPod Touch.
If you are actually going to be someone that was going to commit to the iPhone, I don't think you would need an iPod Touch. If you are someone that has an iPod with your music and your pictures and who also has a PDA, it's silly to carry two different beasts. And the iPod Touch is so much easier and lighter and smaller than my old Palm Pilot that there was no choice for me. I'm very happy, and I look forward to when games are available for it.
Do you think it's going to work when you're on your trip overseas? Does the iPod Touch work on a European network?
On that, I don't know. That's one of the things I'm going to find out. I know that I'll be able to pull up my calendar, my contacts, my music, and my photos regardless. I would presume if I have Wi-Fi that we'll find out how Safari will work on that Wi-Fi. But if I have Wi-Fi, I should have internet access wherever I am.
Well, when you come back from your trip, please join us again here on the MyMac podcast. And we thank you very much. We want to hear how your iPod Touch worked across the pond. And hopefully it will be a great success. Your trip will be a great success. And you'll be able to keep recommending the iPod Touch to the listeners and readers of MyMac and MyMac.com. Thanks, Kathy Schindel.
Hi, it's John Nemo here on the MyMac podcast. Today we're testing the stereo sound recorder for iPod. This will work on the new Classic or the new Nano, and it's made by Tuneware, and I'm recording live. I'm speaking about 6 to 8 inches, but there is no way to tell how the volume is coming in. Anyway, I'll tell you more about this, but just when you think it can't get any stranger on the MyMac podcast, it does. So let's have a little bit of live music to test the Tuneware stereo sound recorder for iPod. Here we go. Nobody knows you when you're down and out. Once I led the life of a millionaire. Spent all my money like I just didn't care. Taking my friends out for a good time. Buying fancy liquor, champagne and wine, and then I began to fall so low. Didn't have no money or no place to go. If I ever get my hands on a dollar bill again, I'm gonna squeeze it and tease it till it the eagle grins. And then we'll pick up the story in a few minutes, but I want to let you know that I'm extremely pleased with the ease of use of the Tuneware stereo sound recorder for iPod. It's $50. We'll definitely put the link for this on our show notes, and it's got all kinds of nice features for external microphones and charging your iPod, which is what I'm doing while I'm recording. And I'm making a voice memo using the Apple's built-in voice memo capability. So I'm going to stop right now, listen to this recording, and then we will have yet another microphone to test. So don't touch that dial. I'll be right back.
For a mere $200 more, you can have the X-Tag USB solution for a personal computer. This is from Revo Labs, and again, we will have the show notes. This is a wireless, secure digital microphone. It is extremely small. It says no wires to constrain your movement. A rechargeable battery. Oh my goodness. Use it for VoIP, Skype, web conferencing, distance education, speech recognition, and a little more music. We left our song off at the beginning of the course. So here goes the course. I am wireless about 20 feet from my computer. Nobody knows you. When you're down and out, in your pocket, you haven't got a penny. And as for friends, well, there ain't too many. But just as soon as I get back on my old 2 feet again, everybody wants to be my long-lost friend. And you know, it's plain to see, beyond a doubt, nobody knows you when you're down and out. We've listened to two exceptional microphones here on the MyMac podcast, and this is really a first look and a first listen. We will be doing a full evaluation over the summer, but I wanted you to get a sense without any muss or fuss or monkey business. I just recorded using the X-Tag from Revo Labs, just like I just recorded using that microphone. What is this thing called? The Tuneware iPod microphone. And I'm giving you thumbs up on both of them, but let's hear how they sound. And then we can get back to the podcast, back to the serious fun, and you will be hearing and listening and reading more about these two microphones throughout the summer months. Thank you to Tuneware and to Revo Labs for providing these for our evaluation and for your wacky listening pleasure here. John Nemo signing off.
And we're back. This time we've got Sam Levin joining me and Guy Searle. Me. That's good English, isn't it? Hello, Sam Levin.
Hey, hey, hey.
Cool Mac picks. I know you've got at least three of them this week. And we're also going to do a little bit of a contest thing here.
Oh, yeah, we're going to talk about that in a second. Hope the phone... If the phone rings, guys, it might be Apple calling. You know, they call every time I'm on with my Mac, and they're always... It's either Steve Jobs or someone important. I got to tell them, hey, can I call you back? So that's what goes on. Anyway, what are we doing? Cool Mac Picks?
Let's start with Cool Mac Picks.
Okay, Cool Mac Picks. Let's start off with O'Reilly. O'Reilly... You know, they're well known in the publishing business, also conferences, O'Reilly Media. But O'Reilly has come out with a book called The Big Book of Apple Hacks.
I've heard of that book.
Okay. Now, guys, I'm a geek, but not an uber geek. You guys are total uber geeks. I'm just the son of the uber geek. And I like to get into the Mac and figure out cool stuff, but not terminal stuff and code level stuff. What I like about this book from O'Reilly is the fact that it caters to you guys. It caters to people like me. There's stuff that normal people can read, how to hack simple stuff like iChat, iMovie, iPhoto. For example, they show you how to download an Apple script for free and basically have your iChat act as a bot. So if you come on and say, hey, Sam, how you doing? This bot or avatar, her name is Eliza, starts talking to you and asking you questions. It's so funny. So I'm going to set it up and try it out next week just for the heck of it. But so they talk about many different things, how to just do some really cool things with your operating system, your Mac operating system. But they also get into things about Google, Google Maps, iPhone. They can get very nitty-gritty all the way to just some simple, simple stuff, how to make better use of iPhoto 8 in the layouts and how to make it look better. Because a lot of people don't understand that you could do really cool cards in iPhoto 8. But I can go on and on. This book is huge. It's like, God, what is it? Over 600 pages long.
Does it have a list of contributors in it?
It's Chris Siebold is the author, and uh-huh. It's part of the Make magazine series. And you know, Make magazine is really cool, but it's a first edition. It just says Chris Siebold. That's it.
Any ideas, Guy?
Yeah, I think there was a couple people who also contributed to that book.
Yeah, couple. Do you know anybody in particular?
I'm reading this. The editor is Tom Seguros. I really don't see anything else. But the bottom line is there's a ton of cool stuff that you can do with your normal operating system, your Leopard operating system on a Mac. You don't need some special Mac. It talks about what you can do with Apple TV, how you can use TiVo to basically be an Apple TV, which is really cool.
Are there any iWeb tips in there?
I would say yes, but this is so big. I didn't go through each chapter, but there's stuff on, I mean, just...
If it sounds like we're setting you up for something, Sam, go ahead and explain it to him, Guy.
Why? Yeah, the iWeb stuff that's in there was Chris had asked me if he could call from some of the articles that I did at MyMac.com about customizing iWeb. And I'd gone ahead and given him my permission. I had to sign a form for O'Reilly. And
Chris is one of our writers.
Ah!
So we kind of know a lot about this book. We had a big MyMac podcast number 179 two shows ago.
Well,
we had Chris on, and he gave away a copy of this book.
Well, that's fine, but I'm going to talk about it still because I think more people should know about this thing.
Absolutely.
And, I don't read books like this a lot, but... I think it's a lot of fun. Anyway, I will get into the iWeb stuff because there is stuff on iWeb. Of course, I'm looking at it now. It's a huge amount of stuff. I use iWeb, by the way.
Yeah, anyway. I haven't seen the book yet.
You haven't seen it?
No, I haven't. I'm still waiting on either Chris or O'Reilly to send me my copy. We'll see what happens.
Okay, well,
I haven't got a copy yet either. But
if I have to, I'll buy it.
You have to... No. Guys, don't worry about it. We'll get it taken care of. That's crazy. Are you joking? You don't have the book?
No, I don't have it yet.
Okay. Anyway, I really dig it. And, of course, they have a Google Hacks book, too. Today I just want to talk about the Apple Hacks. It's really cool. Anyway, that's from O'Reilly. It's listed there. I put the links and everything. I'm glad we're still talking about it because their books are great. Next on the Cool Mac Picks. Okay. Oakley, you know Oakley sunglasses, right?
Sure. I used to wear them all the time in the 90s.
Okay, well, I used to wear them when I work out. Oakley makes a line of really great, whole line of sporting products, including eyewear. And some of their stuff have electronics built into it. Namely, some of their sunglasses have headphones built in that you can actually plug your Mac or PC into these, and you can download your tunes and listen. Well, they've been creating these sunglasses for years, and one of the sunglasses they came up with a couple years ago was called the O-Rocker. And the O-Rocker basically are really beautiful headphones, well-constructed, with Bluetooth built into it.
Yeah, I saw those at the Macworld Expo.
So they're sunglasses. They've got earpieces built in that swivel. They're really comfortable, and they've got Bluetooth built in. So... if you have a Bluetooth device, you can stream your Bluetooth music or whatever it is from your Mac or PC to this. But if you get the iCombi adapter, it's separate, you can plug it into your iPod and basically stream your Bluetooth music to the headphones. Now, what's really cool is I tested it with the iPod Touch. It works seamlessly.
Really?
Yep. Yep.
Now, which ones do you have? There's three different flavors, the 249, 199, and 125.
I have the 199 O-Rocker. They make a higher, probably the 249 means it has...
the razor wire.
Either that or the optics. They've got some that are polarized lenses, which I think are more expensive. But we've got the link on there. I'm an Oakley fan, so I'm kind of biased a little bit. I think they make great eyewear. But the headphones are really, really cool. They make another line called Thumps, and those are basically – they have a USB mini, mini USB plug, and you can plug it into your Mac, download – accepts AAC, MP3, all these different formats. So I've been using those for over 3.5 years, and they're great because you don't need to carry anything but that. So check it out. It's from Oakley. They're well-known with their sporting products and eyewear. Next up, got something a lot of fun for people that have iPhones and iPod Touches. It's called... it's iMunchies, iVegas, and iBeer.
These look fun.
These are really cool videos that are basically gags, and you install them onto iTunes, and they're videos that fit specifically for the screen of your iPhone or iPod Touch. For instance, iVegas is a slot machine, and it looks like a slot machine. It acts like one, and... all of a sudden, it spits out coins, and it's a really cool conversation piece because you carry, you know, 5 quarters with you. It's got one for pounds as well, called iVegas Pound, and you just carry the coins with you. And once it spits out the coins, you dump the coins out into your hand and act like it's, you know, giving you a jackpot. It's really, really cute. It's from a guy that's a well-known magician. That has repurposed a bunch of his acts to do really cool tricks and gags for the iPhone. They do one for popcorn. The iPhone starts popping popcorn. It's really hilarious. You can reach down into your iPhone and pick up the popcorn. So it's a video.
That would be kind of cool. I think someone would probably come up with... I know they have the one that's beer.
Yeah, it's called iBeer, and basically you act as if the iPhone has a glass of beer, and you tilt it and as if you're drinking the beer. It's a cute gag. I actually bought all of them yesterday. They're $2.99, or you can get I don't know what the deal is, but I got it, and I started using it. It's hilarious. You will laugh once you have.
That would be pretty cool if someone makes a little app like that uses the motion sensor.
Yep.
So when you tip it, it will actually tip. That would be pretty cool.
Yeah. So I check it out. It's online. It's called Hot Tricks. That's the company, hottricks.com. I provided the link. Steve is the person behind it. He actually lives here in the Bay Area and runs a nightclub, owns a nightclub, a jazz club here in San Francisco. And he's actually been doing magic tricks on the Mac for years. He's got a trick that you use the EyeSight camera. So you could do tricks, long-distant tricks with other people that are watching you on EyeSight. So this guy is really remarkable, very creative. It's called Hot Tricks, and it's called iMunchies, iVegas, and iBeer for the iPhone or iPod Touch. And it's really cool. All right, so those are the three things. I guess we could talk about our giveaway, right?
Yeah, let's bring in a couple other people to join us on the show, and we're going to bring them in and chat with them and continue with them after our break. Joining us right now is John Nemo. Hello, John.
Hi, everybody.
How are you?
Fine. How does my microphone sound?
A little iffy.
A little iffy? Okay, I could try a different one.
Just get closer to it.
Yeah.
Is this better now?
Yep, better now. Hello, Lee.
Hey, how's it going, everybody?
Lee Gibbons, of course, and we're still here with Sam. We got. Hey. Let's do this contest real quick, Sam. This is pretty cool.
So our friends over at Casemate, that's case-mate.com. We'll put the link on our my Mac site today. Are going to give us a few different cases. Actually, we'll do. Why don't we give a few different cases away? I think that's fine. And for the person that, I guess, how will we do it? The first and the eighth person, or is it just random?
Yeah, I think random's probably best. We never know when someone's going to listen to the show. Okay. What we're going to say is send an email to tim@mymac.com on or before April 30th.
We'll
if
pick
you
two-
send it on May 1st, it's not going to work.
Right, we'll pick two people out of you know, the hat, so to speak.
The millions who will enter.
All you have to do is go on to Casemate. We'll put the link there. Choose if you have an iPod or you have an iPhone or an iPod Touch, choose which case you would like. And, of course, we are not including the diamond-encrusted gold $20,000 case.
They love us, but not that much.
No.
This is any of their other leather cases. They just came out with a whole new line of croc embossed. They look like croc, but they're leather. They're really, really cool.
I like the pink one.
Yeah, they have a
pop. I remember I've got a story about being attacked by a pink croc once, but we'll talk about that some other time.
That was in Vegas. Okay, so
and what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas.
Stays in Vegas, yes, but we have video of it. So just to email Tim, and what we'll do is Casemate will send you those, and make sure you put on the subject, "I want Casemate." That's the subject. I want Casemate.
And it'll also help if you put in the message body your name, address, and phone number. And then, so make sure you got to go to Casemate first. And then in your email, put which case you would like. So if you have an iPod Touch, obviously you're going to want to get a Touch case. If you got an iPhone, there you go. It's 160 gig classic. We can do that. So go up to the Casemate website first. Follow the link from mymac.com, show 181. Figure out which one you'd like and send us an email, and we will pick two random winners.
And this is only for iPod Touch, or iPhone. Though, if you have a BlackBerry, that's fine. That's cool, too. They make BlackBerry products, which are really beautiful. Same style, but they're for the Curve and 8800. So
but
that's
if you
okay.
have a Zune, we're not supporting. You're not going to get a Zune case.
No.
I have to draw the line somewhere.
No Zune. We don't do Zune. We don't do any of that other stuff. We just do the other products. But that's okay. So that's our friends from Casemate. Thank you very much, Casemate. And
once again, go to MyMac's website. Follow the link to casemate.com. The little minus sign, mate.com. And pick what you want to win. It's pretty cool. We've never had a pick what you want to win before, Sam.
Well, we're going to start a trend here, Tim.
We kind of had one at the 100th podcast, Guy, where
we
had a whole lot of products to give away, and nobody wanted the Warcraft game.
No. and I was so sick that, you know, my voice was giving out, but I somehow stuck through it.
Well, Sam, thanks very much. We'll see you again next week for Cool Mac Picks, and we'll find out who the winners are and announce those at the same time.
And I'll help you get your Apple Hacks book.
I'm sure it's probably on its way real soon. I'm looking forward to reading it.
All right, thanks, guys. Bye.
And we're back. Lee Gibbons, you were here for the end of Sam Levin's talk, but you didn't really get to say much. How you doing?
Not bad. How's everything, everybody?
Doing well. How's the Mac software at AOL coming?
Not bad. We're in the final few bugs. We got a couple of big ones, but we got through almost 60 in the last few days, so the team's pretty confident, and we'll have the software out soon for all our users to go out and download.
Well, I've been using the beta for a couple months now, and I'm pretty happy with the beta, to be honest.
Yeah, I got to get an equality for my mother-in-law. That's my goal.
That's your barometer?
Yeah. If I can make her happy, I'm all set.
John Nemo's also joining us. John, usually we're playing your all over the Mac segments on the show, and we are this week. In fact, we already played one. But we got you live right now. I saw you jumped on Skype, and I invited you into the show, and thanks a lot for joining us here.
I'm happy to be here, mostly because I'm testing a new microphone, and I want to hear how it sounds. How do I sound?
Sounds pretty good. Sounds like you need to be a little bit closer to the mic, though.
Okay, let me crank up the volume, get a little bit closer. Hang on a sec. Just keep talking.
And, when someone's testing new equipment live, you never know how it's going to come out. Usually something like this, John would be playing with and, you know, recording and stop recording and listening and then start recording again and getting it just right. But when we're doing it live on the show, you never know what's going to happen. How's that, John?
That's good for me. I'm way up at the top.
Yeah, that sounds a lot better. So, Guy, you are in that book that Sam was talking about, obviously.
Yes.
Looking forward to seeing what he used?
Yeah, I am. I'm kind of curious as to how much he did use. I went to O'Reilly's site and looked at the table of contents and the index, and it looks like he's got about 12 to 14 pages of iWeb stuff. I have no idea if he went to any other sources, so I don't know how much of it's going to be mine.
I'm kind of looking forward to reading it myself, even though I'm not even in the book, but some of the content from My Mac Magazine is up there, so I'm really looking forward to it. You remember last week, guys, we were talking about bundles, the Mac Update bundle, and what's the other one?
Mac Heist.
The big question that we had was, at least with the Mac Update promo, is when those software titles are going to be released or unlocked. Right now, they've sold almost 6,000 bundles. And Parallels Desktop, Banner Zest, and Sound Studio are all unlocked.
Yes, I've gotten emails on that.
So I'm wondering, they haven't even sold 6,000 bundles quite yet. They probably will by the end of this night, maybe. Do you guys think they unlock these ahead of time because they are not going to meet their projections? Or do you think that whatever the milestones was, it just wasn't as high as we thought?
Yeah, I'd say that's probably pretty close to the truth. I think the level to unlock Parallels, I think they had it 15,000, and I can't see them being able to get to 15,000 by April 29th.
No.
Yeah, I think they lowered the bar because their history. They said in 2007 they sold 27,000 bundles.
The problem there was that,
and I guess they felt 15,000 would be pretty easy to hit.
I think the problem. They launched the same time that the Mac Heist did. I mean, right now, like I said, Mac Update's at just about 6,000. As we're recording, it's 5,961. The Mac Heist bundle is at 62,000, which is right around where they were the last time we recorded a show. So I'm wondering, is this just not the time to buy software bundles? What do you think, John?
Well, I was struck when I listened to you last time is how through just sheer bad luck, they both happened to be simultaneous. Here in Tucson, Arizona, 2 weekends ago, there were 6 different organizations all having a garden tour on the same day.
Oh, no.
It's pretty much the same scenario. If I were running Mac Heist or the update, I would call up the other ones and say, hey, guys, let's get together on this. This year you're in March. Next year you can be in April and everybody's happy.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah, I think they're going after the same group of customers there. So
it's exactly the same core of customers. I mean, 12 applications in one, and Mac Bundle's got 10, right?
Yep.
So that's a lot of software, 22 titles that you can conceivably get for, what, $120?
Right. And that's some amazing software.
Some of it's really good. Some of it's like, But we did get an email last week from Eric Osaki. Yeah, he says, Tim, Mac Heist during the regular Mac Heist in January as previously. They had been doing the unlock dance as well. I got some great software in both the previous bundles and did not wait too long for the unlock codes. I like both these bundles, but I have a lot of the Mac Heist software. I plan to get the Mac update for 2 reasons. Story mode from Mariner due to your interview, and I get a deep discount on the Mac update membership. Thanks for the great podcast, Eric. Thanks, Eric. So, looks like they sold a bundle because of our interview with the people at Mariner and Story Mill.
Hopefully, he'll go to mymac.com and hit back up the promo link, and you'll get a couple of bucks out of it.
You know, I am wondering though, how much of a coincidence is, or it's just like John says, bad luck that Mac Update launched the same time that the Mac Heist did.
Well, you know what I found was odd was leading up to the previous Mac Heist. Well, we won't go into all the stuff that happened before that, but you know there was a lot of preparation and a lot of like pre advertising that this was going to happen. And this time it almost seemed like Mac Heist just said, "Okay, here's."
Oh, by the way, we're back. Yeah,
yeah.
I got an email from the Mac Heist team about 3 days before they went live, asking if I wanted to advertise it like I did last time under the same terms. And I was like, yeah, sure. And they told me, well, this is going to launch in 3 days. And I was thinking, wow, that's kind of quick. I was a little bit surprised. Now, theirs is because they released a retail bundle of this. So right. They kind of rolled it out on the website as well. I'm wondering how many people are still buying it online, or now that they're releasing a retail bundle, how many stores are carrying this bundle and how many is selling at the retail level?
Hard to say.
Yeah. If you saw this at a store, Lee, would you be interested in picking it up if you didn't already own most of the applications?
Well, you know, it's a pretty good deal. I think if the person at the store can actually give you a little insight in some of the applications since they're not as widely known.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely. I think it's a very attractive bundle.
Would you be interested in buying shareware in a box, John, that you have to go home, install, and wait for an unlicensed code?
Yes. Yeah. This whole thing I find very attractive. And I was involved in the original heist that had the Photo Magico software because it was such an unbelievable deal. But I haven't done it since then, only because of the way I use my computers and just because of my lifestyle. But I find the whole concept, whether it's retail or web-based, very attractive.
We were talking with earlier, John and Lee, the people from, well, the people, one guy from CodeWeavers, Jeremy White, the CEO and the founder of CodeWeavers, and their product Crossover Mac.
Excellent.
And we kind of asked him about these bundles, and he basically said that they were interested. Things got kind of hectic, and it kind of fell through the cracks, and he didn't participate, but he's very interested in the future. Now, I think that their product would do really well in one of these bundles.
Yeah, but honestly, it kind of depends on what else is also going to be bundled with it at the same time, because obviously with the Mac Update promo, the big application that was included was Parallels. So if you had Parallels on one side and then Crossover Mac on the other, you know, that's almost kind of working, you know, not to make a joke out of it, but at cross purposes.
Yeah. John, this is kind of going to be for you a little bit.
Okay.
You know, I use Twitter, and one of the nice features of Twitter is people can send you direct messages. Not everyone's going to see them. One of our listeners, Jeff Madison, sent me a direct question, and it is, he's not sure what kind of mic he should get, but he's looking at updating his mic. He's got less than $500, up to $500 maybe, $500 or less, he says. He's going to use it for screencasts, voiceovers, podcasting, that sort of thing. And he wanted some recommendations. Do you have any?
I'm very fond of the USB microphone series from Samson Audio. Both Robert Haselrig and I have been using those for quite a long time. And if you know Robert's wonderful audio quality and my somewhat less wonderful audio quality during the times that I've done the live interviews with the authors on Book Bites Live,
yeah.
Not tonight, but in the past, I've used the CO3U from Samson Audio. It's roughly $200, $250, and that's for a three-way microphone. And then a one-way microphone is the CO1U, also from Samson Audio. So if you want a USB microphone that's professional quality that gets picked up immediately from your Macintosh, the Samson Audio is highly recommended by me and by Robert Haselrig.
Now, I don't use a USB microphone. I use microphones that require phantom power. Thus, I have a mix board, and I also have the mobile pre-USB that will supply the phantom power, and then both of those devices hook up to the Macintosh via USB, but it's still not a USB microphone. I was in Guitar Centers. Do you guys got Guitar Centers in your area, Lee?
Yes.
Yeah, we got a few.
Yeah, I think about everybody. The Guitar Center, really kind of cool stores. I like them, even though it's a big chain. When you go into them, it feels like it's catering to that community. It feels like it's from there. I don't know how they do it, but I just kind of get that impression every time I go in there. But what is the mix board again, guy?
Oh, the Alesis,
yes.
USB 2 multimix,
and that's sure what I have.
Well, I think you and I have the Alesis USB multimix, which is not USB 2.
Correct. But you don't really need USB 2 for audio. But if you want to listen to yourself while you speak, if you want to monitor your voice,
right.
There's a delay with non-USB 2.0 devices.
Yes.
So I, for instance, I can't listen to myself when I'm recording the podcast because it comes out a split second later and it's very, very distracting. But when I picked up the Myelesis, and I did get it from them, I also picked up some microphones, and I got the MXL 990 series. It's a small mic. You will need to buy a stand with it. And I'm not using it right now because it doesn't fit the mic stand that I'm using right now. The mic stand that works with this one's actually in this podcast studio where the G5 is dead still. By the way, if anybody has a 600-watt G5 power supply,
send it along.
I'm willing to pay shipping. I really need one bad. I really like this mic, John. I think it's a little bit better than the M-Audio quality, even though the diaphragm inside is about the same size. I really like the microphone. It seems to work well.
Well, the first decision anybody needs to make is how technical they want to be with their microphones. And if they want to do a brain-dead simple USB microphone, plug it in, go to your sound control panel, make sure it's selected, and start recording or talking, that's the easiest. But for serious audio, you do need to have more of a rig like you're talking about, and that's obviously a concern that people will need to address. I think for $500 on his budget, he can't go wrong. Whatever he gets, it will be good.
If it's over $100, Jeff, it's going to probably be a pretty decent microphone. And the other thing you got to keep in mind is, even if it doesn't sound quite as great as you thought it was going to, you can really clean up the sound in GarageBand pretty well. So keep that in mind as well. Any deficiencies in a mic, you may be able to hide those deficiencies in GarageBand by, you know, messing with EQ a little bit. So that's always something to keep in mind as well. I'm looking at our show notes that Guy graciously supplies that we ignore half the time.
I don't mind.
We talked about this last week some on our sad show, and I did get some email, by the way, thanking us for talking about Stan and that it was really a sad show to listen to.
Yeah.
But one of the topics, the big one, was PsyStar. And got a little bit more about those this week, Guy.
Yeah. There was so much hype and misinformation coming from, you know, both the web and PsyStar itself.
No.
Yeah, yeah. That it was kind of difficult to figure out whether, you know, is this a scam? Is this, you know, is this for real? What are they doing? And yeah, you know, little things like changing their address 4 times on the website. That, you know, I'm sorry, that just makes it kind of tough to deal with. But now, you know, they've got a where is it? They've got a new company to handle their incoming money, and also their online store page now shows that it's secure as where it was not before. And they say, you know, that they actually have a warehouse that they're using to apparently put these things together. They've been hiring people. And on their website, they talk about that, you know, that they're putting some of these together and then they're going to start shipping them out. I have yet to see anything on the web on anyone actually receiving one.
Have you heard about anything like that, John? Anybody getting one of these PsyStar Macs?
No, I was actually in the car when I was listening to last week's podcast. And if you could have seen the expression on my face, I think it would have stopped traffic when you were talking about the reputability of this particular company. So I think I will just leave it at that.
Yeah, well, I don't want to disparage anybody because without, you know, I don't know if they're legitimate yet or not. A part of me wants them to be because I think it's kind of cool being able to buy a Mac from somebody not Apple at such a cheap price. But the skepticism and covering this industry for almost 15 years as I have, and John is the same, there's a lot of skepticism there. And
yeah, sometimes the deal is no deal.
Well, sometimes the proof is in the pudding, and I haven't tasted the pudding yet.
Right.
So, you know, how long do you guys think it's going to be before we start hearing reports on these things actually shipping, Lee?
I think there'll be a couple of people out there, and I think I did read a couple of comments people made today who contacted the company. They do something strange with the hard drive. So if your hard drive fails, you have to ship the computer back to them.
Yeah. Old computer?
Yeah. They have to replace the hard drive because of the amount of work they do to make it Leopard compatible. So they don't recommend people installing Leopard themselves. So that was some of the comments people have who have contacted the company and looked into buying one. So I'd be interested to see if someone bought one and you know, took it home and tried it out.
Well, one of the other things that's really missing is there's still no wireless networking options.
Yeah, that's, I don't know. The whole thing seems a little fishy to me, and I think I'll leave it at that. It's a little fishy so far.
Yeah, chances are there'll be more information on this next week. John, they're based out of Doral, Florida, which is down in the Miami area.
Oh, David Cohen is right there for a couple more days.
He'll get him, David.
Back to the UK with him.
Yeah, well, my brother Larry actually works in South Broward County, which probably isn't all that far.
Well, we should send him on an expedition with a camera and a microphone.
Two turntables and a microphone.
There you go. Apple released their second quarter results a couple days ago. Let's see. 2.2 million Macs sold, over 10 million iPhones, or iPods. And 1.7 million iPhones between January 1st and March 31st. So this is after the Christmas season.
Right. Yep.
Those are pretty impressive numbers for after Christmas.
Yeah, this is normally a slow quarter for Apple. You know, back-to-school sales haven't, you know, sales to schools and universities hasn't really taken off really fast yet. And
that starts about right now.
Yeah, now it's starting. So I was pretty impressed that fiscal Q2 was looking pretty good.
No, it's looking like it's a 50% increase over the second quarter of 2007.
John, you don't own an iPhone, correct?
Correct, but David Weeks was just over here, and we were working on some iPhone case reviews together. So I spend a little bit of time every week with iPhone, but I do not own one.
Are you interested in getting one anytime soon, or are you still happy with the pink razor?
I'm happy with my,
see, I remembered.
I'm happy with my pink razor. I'm happy with my 80-gig iPod Classic. And I know Chad said on the podcast 2 weeks ago that it's not a big deal driving using the touch or the iPhone, but I'm not prepared to take that risk. I mean, Chad is much, obviously, from looking at the two of us, he's obviously much lighter and quicker on his feet than I am. So I'm just going to be a stick in the mud. And what I really need in a device I have, and I'm happy to get an iPhone when that's what I need.
A lot of rumors going around that there's new iMacs coming, Guy.
Yeah, the site, and I don't have it down here, the site that predicted the last upgrades for, I think, the iPods has come out and said that new iMac models are due next week. It looks to be pretty much just speed bumps and bigger hard drives.
I can say that I'm having a little bit of a problem with this new iMac that I've got. For people who's been listening for any length of time, I've got a 24-inch iMac. The extreme, blah, blah, blah. I'm getting a little bit of screen burning.
Really?
When I leave it on all night long with the mail application in the front, when I close the application, I can see the dividing lines between the messages still on my screen. Now, if I... The fix to this that I found is to open up a simple text, I'm showing my age, a text edit document, and I fill it to the whole screen, which spans two different monitors, and I just let it sit there for like a half hour, and then those lines go away. But I'm a little worried about it at this point. I'm starting to think that once Apple releases some new iMacs, I'm going to take this into the Apple store and say, this thing is getting screen burn-in. This shouldn't happen in 2008.
Yeah, that's a little worrisome, especially with these new LCDs.
Exactly. Right next to it, my Sidecart monitor is a 23-inch cinema display, the aluminum one.
Yep.
Never had a problem. This is what was hooked up to the G5, and I've had it for 2 years because my old 23-inch monitor, the plastic one that goes around, that's actually at Chad Perry's house. So I have a newer, I don't know, maybe 2 years old now, cinema display, and it's never had a burn-in issue. This one with a glossy iMac screen has had a burn-in issue, and I've had this for, 3 months? I think that's worrisome as well.
Well, how actually do you use it? Do you have it set up to dim or go out after a certain amount of time?
No. But it's supposed to go to sleep, at least the monitor, after 3 hours of non-use, but a lot of mornings I come downstairs and it's still on. The monitor never turned itself off. And I'm getting the screen burning.
And there's no background processes going on that
nothing
going to sleep?
No. It's odd, and worrisome at the same time. What do you think I should do, John? Wait for the new ones to come out and then take it into Apple?
Yes.
Yeah, that's kind of my hope, too, that they're going to look at it and say, well, we're not going to replace the screen on such an expensive machine. Because this is the $3,000
yep.
model.
Right, the 2.8 Core 2 Duo Extreme.
Right, and I'll tell them, look, this is my only Mac.
As if.
I know that they know me up at the Apple Store anyways, so... but I'm going to say, you know, I'd really prefer if you guys just replace this at this point. I mean, I'm already getting screen burning on this model.
Well, I happen to be the expert on replacing computers, as you know from listening to All Over the Mac.
So, yeah, absolutely.
So I would say just be cheerful, but as I say, be patient, pleasant, and persistent.
Yeah. I don't think I'm going to have a problem, but I'm kind of hoping that this rumor is true, that there are new iMacs coming, a speed bump. Maybe they look a little bit different. And I'm more than happy to replace this machine with something else. Obviously, I want to, if they're going to replace the entire machine, I want my hard drive erased while I'm on the premises.
Oh, yeah.
And I'll have everything backed up via Time Machine anyway, so that's not a problem.
Have you called AppleCare about it, Tim?
No, not yet. That's going to be soon.
I think you should to establish a case history. I urge you to do that.
Yes, the problem is they're going to want me to take it in.
You had it for like less than 2 months, right?
No, but I've had it for about 3.5 months. The way AppleCare works, if you live a certain number of miles away from a physical store, a whole different method of servicing, remote servicing, kicks in. And I don't need to get into that now, but it is indeed the case for someone who does not live close to a physical Apple store.
I don't know. I live 45 minutes away from two different ones, so I don't know if I'd fall into that category or not.
Well, it may be 46 minutes away, but you can figure that out.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, there's actually another Apple store opening up here in Virginia.
And I will be there 6 o'clock in the morning, standing in line at Fair Oaks. I'll be there at Fair Oaks Mall this weekend.
Fair Oaks Mall.
Yep.
It's going to be Saturday morning.
Yeah, it's going to be Saturday morning. They open at 10. Actually, I read on IFO Apple Store. I think I thought this store was going to open like a year or two ago, but it's been a long time coming.
You going to go there, Guy?
Oh, I don't know.
Lee's going to be there.
Our weekends are pretty filled up.
Lee's going to be there. You can bring your iPod and do a podcast.
If he shows up at... actually, that's not a bad idea. If he shows up at 6 a.m., there's already going to be a huge line there. Well, yeah. Is that when they're going to open the doors?
Well, we think the mall usually lets the mall walkers in around 6, 6.30, so I'll be there as early as I can. And we have a lot of stuff with the kids this weekend, so I'm going to... Right around 10, 15, I'll probably be out of there.
I'm telling you, Guy, you should grab their portable recording equipment, head up to the mall, and you and Lee can do a spot-on podcast for the next show segment.
That's the great thing about that little tiny iPod microphone.
And that's this Saturday?
Yeah, this Saturday.
Yeah. Well, see, this might actually work out perfect, because next week's show, we've got Larry O'Connor, and that'll be a fun interview. He's with Otherworld Computing, or Mac Sales as well.
Right, MacSales.com.
MacSales.com. And we're going to chat with him, but I may be completely burned out by this time next week. Because on Tuesday, Grand Theft Auto 4 comes out.
And that's for the Mac.
And if you think that the baby made it so I didn't get much sleep, wait till after I played Grand Theft Auto 4 for, you know, 3 or 4 days.
Well, I can always crank up a 40 or 50-hour version of All Over the Mac.
There you
one
go.
Thing, if Guy's going to host the show, we want to make sure.
I've got the other track turned on. So it's not 45 minutes of me sitting there going, yes, that's interesting. Silence.
So, John, where do you get the people that you interview on the All Over the Mac segment? I mean, because you get a very wide group of people, you know, college professors, some kid who just happens to own an iPhone that's working at a furniture store, I think he was. A big range of people. Where are you meeting these people at, and how are you talking them into coming on the show?
Well, the great thing about having the Eterol R09 portable digital voice recorder is I don't need to do a lot of planning. I'm fairly experienced at interviewing at this point. So once I find somebody who's willing to be a victim, I just say, okay, if I ask you a few questions, and that's it. I mean, it literally happens just like that. Some people I ask ahead of time, but most people, it just happens just like that on the spot, and I'm overjoyed with how responsive and communicative our participants are on All Over the Mac.
Yeah, I'm amazed when I listen to some of the conversations that you have on that segment and this the diverse group of people that will actually talk to you. It's pretty cool.
Well, one of the things that I'm particularly proud about is we do have a lot of female voices on it to get away from.
Yes, I like that.
So many of the podcasts are just guys. And the other thing is so many of the podcasts are by and for people who are ultra techs. And I want to make sure our listeners and ultimately our readers know that MyMac, the magazine on the web and the podcast, is for all sorts of people, men and women, young and old, and not just the super geekers.
I totally agree with you, John, and I thank you very much for pointing that out. Like I said, a couple of show notes here. Next week we have Larry O'Connor in a burned-out GTA. Tim Robertson will be here, hopefully. The week after that, we're going to have BJ. Now, BJ isn't a famous Mac guy, doesn't run a company that sells Mac software or anything like that. He's simply someone that's listened to our podcast for a while. We met him for the first time in person anyways at the Macworld Expo, and he was on a couple of the shows that we did there, especially with the listener meetup. Yeah. And he is a character and a half, and I'm really looking forward to getting BJ on the show and talking to him. I know he's listening right now, so shout out to BJ.
He actually ferried us around quite a bit.
Yeah, he did. He did. He picked me up at the airport, and then we went out and picked up Larry, and then Larry and BJ went and picked up Guy.
Yeah.
That was kind of crazy.
And parked illegally to get Starbucks.
That's right. And then we all crammed in without BJ on, Saturday did we leave?
Yeah.
Crammed into that mini bus thing.
Yeah. Oh,
I don't know what the heck that was. That was a nightmare. Yeah. The week after that, the week of, what is it, May 12th through the 16th, that week's show, we're supposed to have a writer by the name of John Heilman. He works for the New York Magazine. Did you guys see the Discovery Channel about the internet, where they talk about Dig on one show and stuff like that? It's the history of the internet, basically. It was like a four-part series, an hour each. Well, he did the show, and it was just fabulous, so I contacted him. He's interested in being on the show, but the problem is he wants to talk via telephone.
Oh,
that's easy to do. I know how to do that. I do that all the time.
No, that's not a problem, but the audio quality is just really poor, and I don't know if I want to sacrifice the audio quality, but I may, because this is the guy that was actually in with the Google crew on the day of the IPO. So this guy knows everybody, and he's been present at these great big events. Go ahead, Jeremy or Lee.
Yeah, I was just thinking about I also teach at the University of Maryland University College. I teach a class on Introduction to Computers, and it's one of those required classes. And I play the Triumph of the Nerd, and I have the two-part series, the first part, and then the new version 2.01. So it kind of reminds me of that. Wow, that's kind of interesting, because Mark Stevens kind of left off after Excite and At Home. So I really wanted him to go back and do an update. So I'm kind of interested in looking at that program.
The week after that, we've got Gideon Mio, I think. I'm not sure how to pronounce his last name. M-A-H-E-U-X. Mio? I don't know. Gideon. He's the principal designer at the Icon Factory. I think he might be pretty cool to talk to.
Yeah, I'd be interested in talking to him, definitely.
Yep. The Mac world is very, very broad, so there's a lot of people that we can talk to. That's just this month and next month, and obviously, if you guys would like to hear any particular guests on the show, hey, send me an email and make a recommendation. It's tim@mymac.com. And, we really don't have a problem getting people on the show. Most people, especially if they're a company, they want to come on and pimp their product, as you will. But even regular, everyday Mac users like to come on the show and talk Macs. I think it's kind of fun we're not Barbara Walters here. We don't attack anybody. Well, we did when Lee first came on the show, but that was totally different. So, anything going on up at the MyMac website we should know about, John?
Well, I am delighted. Let me just move my screen a little bit here. I'm delighted to have had a very comprehensive interview with a gentleman named Christopher Lowe from Key Ovation Gold Touch, which makes custom keyboards, not custom, but specially designed keyboards for people that have wrist problems and things like that. And I recommend everybody read that. It's right at the top on the feature side, on the left side, right underneath.
This podcast. It was interesting. It was interesting. I was reading it as I was editing it, and that was a good interview, John.
And I've been very keen on interviews, so I've got a whole bunch more coming up until they tell me to stop.
We're not going to do it. Keep coming. Artie did a review of a digital photography companion book. That was pretty interesting as well. I mean, we're still, John, one of the only Mac websites out there that regularly reviews books.
Well, I've got some good news about book reviews. I've got two what are called capsule comment book reviews, meaning not 50 paragraphs, but short, concise paragraphs. And on one of them, which is the book is called Exposure, and it's from a photo workshop series published by Wiley Publishers. I have an interview with one of the authors, a written interview, and it's, I'm not saying it's the best, but it's one of the very best author or company interviews we've ever had.
Hmm, interesting. Russ reviewed the 13.3 Radius Vertical Messenger Bag from Targa. So if you've got a MacBook, this might be exactly the bag you're looking for. John, you did the review of the in-ear iPhone headset.
Yes, I'm wearing one right now. There are two
of them.
Two almost identical as far as their function. One from Edemotic Research and one from Ultimate Ears. And I just recommend them extremely highly. The only thing to distinguish one from the other, as far as the quality is concerned, is how you like the fit of their ear tips. But as far as value for money and the quality of the audio, these are outstanding products, especially for the price.
Scott Spanziani, he's one of our new writers. He has two, well, he's got one review and one article up. We don't have enough articles, I have to say. We need to get some more of those. His article is How to Improve Hulu. Hulu is obviously that joint venture between NBC and a couple other broadcasters to make freely available their content online that for some reason they don't want to sell on iTunes. Did you guys see that the article about the NBC guy saying that, oh, we'd like to sell on iTunes except, you know, the whole piracy issue? And I'm going, piracy issue? iTunes? What are you talking
about? As far as I know, there is no video piracy issue with iTunes.
What do you think?
Well, I think it's one of the things Jeff Zucker, he just really, I think he does not like Steve Jobs' power in the field. And I think that they make up, I don't know, I just don't see a lot of issues with Apple's DRM.
Well, they act like you can't pirate Flash video offline, off Hulu. That's a whole lot easier, and there's 1,000 tools to do that than there is to pirate the stuff from the Apple iTunes store.
Yeah, it's a whole different political ball game. It has nothing to do with the technology.
Scott also reviewed the Invisible Shield for the Apple iPhone. And Russ did a review of Photoshop 6 Elements. I should say Photoshop 6. Elements 6. He gave it a pretty good review, but if you go down a little bit farther on the page, David Weeks has an article up from the 14th called Adobe Photoshop Elements 6 Failure. So, you know, weigh both of those. Maybe there's something different about David Weeks's setup that he was having these installation problems, and then Russ didn't have any problems and seemed to really like the program. So, you know, there's always two sides to every story sometimes, and this time it looks like that's going to be the case.
Yeah, so I pre-ordered it and installed it and perfectly fine. First time, it was good.
Yeah, I haven't read a lot of other headaches that people are having with the software bundle, so I don't know if that was just something that's David Weeks had the problem, or he's just really the first ones that had the problem.
It was specific because he had the beta version of CS2 installed on his computer.
Oh.
And so once he'd found the workaround, he took care of it. The installer for Element 6 uses a new format for installers, and we do talk about that a little bit in the article discussion comments underneath Russ's review. But I have been in touch with Adobe, and they say that is the new standard installer, and basically get used to it, get over it, and get on with your life.
Yeah. Again, we want to thank Jeremy White, CEO and founder of Code Weavers. Guy and I had a really good conversation with him early in the show, and we want to thank him for being on the show and talking about the product and a little bit about him. Next week, we will have David Cohen back. His vacation is over, and we're going to chain him to his desk and make sure he's here very late in UK time to record the podcast with us. So, you know, if I'm completely dead, we'll just let
Dave ramble on.
Yeah, he could talk over. And as a reminder, earlier in the show with Sam Levin, we did the contest announcement with Casemate. If you want to enter that contest, send an email to tim@mymac.com and put in it. What was it? I want my Casemate? Was that what
I want Casemate, and make sure you also put somewhere within the email what type of case it is you're looking to get.
Yep, and your name, address, and phone number. We used to have contests pretty much every other week. And we would actually call the winners. We need to maybe do that again here in the future. I think that's kind of fun to call.
Yeah. So if you have a Skype name, you know, if you're on Skype, include that as well.
Yeah, that's a good idea. John, thanks for being on for the segments here.
Terrific.
Appreciate
thanks
it.
A lot, and I hope my microphone was up to the task.
It sounded pretty good to me. Lee, once again, thank you for being on the show.
Thanks, everybody.
And Guy, as always.
Oh, yeah, and if you want to get a hold of us here at the podcast, you can reach us at mymacpodcast@gmail.com or call our number at 1-801-938-5559.
Yeah, no one ever calls it, Guy.
Yeah, I know, but I just feel like I got to do something.
You know, I see how many people download the show and the email that I get about the show, which some of it I actually forward on to you guys. I'm just surprised that no one ever wants to leave audio comments. It's kind of surprising. But c'est la vie.
Thanks for downloading the MyMac.com podcast. You can subscribe to this podcast at our RSS feed at MyMac.com or by visiting the iTunes Music Store's podcast section. Please send all feedback to MyMacPodcast@gmail.com. And thanks for listening to the MyMac.com podcast.